What do we do if God is dead? That's clearly such an important theme for Nietzsche, and expressed in the form not of a simple atheistic declaration, there is no God, but rather God is dead. And it seems to me that Jung has been trying to respond to that, think through the consequences of that. One of the ways in which that was done was through the little text, the Septem Sermones Ad Mortuos. And now we can see with the publication of the Red Book what a big topic this is for Jung. And one of the lines that one finds in the sermons in the Red Book is that a God is not dead, er ist lebendiger denn je. He is more alive than ever. And that's clearly a riposte to Nietzsche.
He's more alive than ever.
Well, that's the statement that's made, and it seems to me that the Red Book, which is a kind of anti-Zarathustra, is wanting to work that through. But it seems to me that look at the way that Nietzsche presents the death of God. He does it in the form of this little passage in the Gay Science 125, this parable of the madman who's going around at midday with the lamp, looking for God, and he can't find him. And this is full of lots of echoes of the biblical story of Elijah, all this stuff about the God on holiday, is he deaf, can't he hear you? There's that kind of play in there. The idea of, as well of in pre-Socratic times, looking for humankind, can you find it as an abstract idea? Diogenes and his lamp. So it's a very rich allegorical story, which is then taken up and assumed as the starting point for Zarathustra, which is of course a great poetic work in its own right. It's a philosophical text, but it's also a literary text. Now compare that with Jung's Red Book, where we have this cry at the beginning, where are you, my soul? Again, it all sounds very Nietzschean. There are lots of echoes from Nietzsche that are built into the Red Book. And you actually have this encounter with however one wants to describe the deity in the Red Book, but it is imaginative, it is poetic. Of course, it's also illustrative as well. It's artistic because you have these pictures. But it seems to me significant that both Nietzsche and Jung are trying to prosecute their arguments with this aesthetic elaboration of them. They're not writing very dry academic treatises. They're writing poetic and imaginative works, but which have a very, very important question, which is this question of, is God dead? And if he isn't, what does it mean for him to be alive?
And when you say or describe the Red Book as an anti-Zarathustra, could you say a little bit more?
I mean, what is Jung up to with the Red Book is a very interesting question, and we can now, thanks to the Black Books, begin to sort of pursue that genesis more clearly in textual terms. But it seems to me an imaginative working through of a set of psychological predicaments, and that's also what Zarathustra is as well. And of course, that's the reading. Perhaps I've been a little bit over-influenced by Jung in this regard. That's the kind of reading that Jung offers in his seminars. Which is a very strange reading in many ways, but amidst all the bits where I sometimes think Jung goes slightly astray, like this whole question of the identity between Zarathustra as a figure and Nietzsche as a writer, I don't find that part so helpful as it. But other parts are full of brilliant intuitions, and I think the real key idea and what's the breakthrough is to see Zarathustra as kind of an unfolding set of psychological experiences. And of course, that also applies to the Red Book as well. And I think that one could interestingly read some of the comments that Jung makes in his Nietzsche seminar and apply them to his Red Book. And I guess I think that's true of lots of things with the Red Book, that in retrospect, we think, aha, statements that are made in Jung's published works take on a new hue when we compare them to the Red Book. I'm thinking about, for example, the couple of the essays on psychology and literature in volume 15, when he talks about the visionary work, and you think, well, my goodness, actually, that's kind of an explanation of what he's up to in the Red Book as well.
I'm wondering about Christ in this, because I also know Chandrasani and Hillman, when they discuss the Red Book in this Lament of the Dead, they are quite clear on sort of concluding that the central sort of theme or the person that shows up that he's trying to really work through and understand is Christ.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering, it's like this absence of Christ or this other pattern of redemption, another type of Eleusa in the form of Faust or Imitatio Christi versus Imitatio Faust. I'm just wondering if there's something that you've been thinking about around this.
I think Sonnum and Gentilman are right to emphasize the centrality of the Christ figure for the Red Book. But of course, it is a Christ figure where the iconography is given this distinctly Jungian twist through having the serpent coming out through the mouth of the Christ figure, for having all this solar symbolism that goes around it. And it's more of a Gnostic figure of Christ, isn't it, than of the Orthodox figure. I suppose I see that it's, and you also have these references to Thomas the Kempis, the Imitation of Christ. So that's another dimension in which this question is addressed. At the same time, when you have the figure of Izdubar, when you have the figure of the god that can be shrunk down into the egg in order to be reborn and so on, that doesn't sound much like Christianity to me. That sounds as if it's moved into a more syncretic, a much more composite kind of approach. And I suppose if one looks at the black books, the figure that emerges for me most strikingly in the seventh of those black books is not Christ, but is Votan. So it seems to me that whilst Christianity is part of Jung's intellectual cultural outlook, it's not the be all and the end all of it. And that's one of the reasons why Jung is important, because if we want a thinker who is global, intercultural, intertextual, he ticks all those boxes.